potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, The Father, Cherry, Tom and Jerry, The United States versus Billie Holiday, and Crisis. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring the reboot of Wrong Turn and The Croods, A New Age. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The new name for the Spider-Man movie, Spider-Man No Way Home. Now, what's interesting about it is in the announcement, they had this little bit with Tom Holland and a joke that he always ends up spoiling things because apparently during the junket of the Avengers, he has spoiled certain things. But this is going back to the home motif because, of course, we had Homecoming and then Far From Home. I don't know why they didn't use Homeroom because they're still going with that high school motif. But it's going to be interesting watching this Spider-Man because I don't know how much longer Spider-Man's going to be working with the Avengers and how much longer he's going to be living through this. And this has nothing to do with anything to do with the comics or anything to do with any story or leaked ideas. It's the fact that Disney is still struggling with trying to get the rights to Spider-Man. And when the last Spider-Man movie did really well, Sony was like, we're going to do it all on our own again. And so Disney's like, okay, fine. We'll just write Spider-Man completely out. And the problem with the Avengers is there's so many characters. You can afford to write out a couple top tier characters. I mean, they built the entire Avengers series without having the X-Men, Spider-Man, or the Fantastic Four, which are arguably the three most recognizable titles in the Marvel Universe. So I'm sure there's going to be some sad things happening in Spider-Man No Way Home or in the subsequent Avengers movies, however, because I think at some point Disney's going to say, okay, you either give us a full-time deal on this, sell us the character back, or we're just going to write him out of the series completely. The next piece of news, CBS All Access, which has been Paramount's go-to streaming service, which, you know, I give them credit. They were one of the first ones to launch. They were ahead of Disney Plus. They were ahead of Peacock. Well, Disney is consolidating all of their stuff to the Disney Plus service. Warner Brothers is trying to consolidate their stuff to the HBO Max service. Peacock will eventually start trying to really consolidate the Universal stuff because that's the parent company. And Paramount is now hitching its wagon to that train. So they've rebranded CBS All Access to be Paramount Plus. Paramount is trying to find its own realm to balance theatrical television and streaming releases. And each company is doing it slightly differently. You know, Disney is still doing theatrical releases, but they're doing some day and date online stuff. They talk about wanting to do like Black Widow as a theatrical only, but it's also releasing stuff directly to the streaming service because of the pandemic. HBO Max has just said, the heck with it, we're releasing everything everywhere all at once. The difference between, say, Disney Plus and HBO Max is it's about twice as much to get HBO Max, and I think that's why they're able to do it, whereas Disney is still doing the premium release content, which is what they're going to be doing with Raya and the Last Dragon next week. Now, Paramount has gotten rid of CBS All Access because I think they think the name CBS is too associated with television, so they're going to Paramount so they can do all their properties. They got rid of the Twilight Zone series, and they're pushing to some more new content, some reboots and originals. They're talking about doing a new Beavis and Butthead movie. They're talking about moving their Halo TV series, which was supposed to be on Showtime, to Paramount Plus, and they're talking about doing a reboot of Frasier and the Rugrats as a CGI version, which I think we'll see how well that settles with the 90s crowd. They're also going to be doing some other movies like a Workaholics movie and Reno 911 special in order to sort of boost existing franchises. But for me, the most interesting piece of news is they've announced that some of their theatricals, in particular Mission Impossible 7 and A Quiet Place 2, which are coming out next fall or this coming fall and winter, those are going to be released in theaters and then 45 days later show up in the Paramount Plus service, which gives you a month and a half to see it or not see it in the theaters. But it's getting closer to the model that both Warner Brothers and Disney are playing with in terms of driving stuff to their streaming service. That theatrical window, which is 45 days, which is different than the 17-day theatrical window that Universal negotiated before they put it on premium, this is all going to be post-pandemic. Do not be fooled into thinking that all this stuff going on is just to get us through the coronavirus. This is the studios mapping out the territory that they want. In the future, you are going to need to purchase each one of these if you want to get all of these major releases. We're going back to the point of spending hundreds of dollars at home entertainment. So all those people who cut the cable, you got to shore up some money for the future. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to hit is for Invincible, which is an animated series from Robert Kirkland, who, of course, did The Walking Dead, and that is going to be airing on Prime on March 26th.
I fought to keep this planet safe. Your power's got to be due any day now, son.
I'm scared, Dad. What if I can't do this?
Follow me.
You need to be better. After everything he's done, how can I live up to all that?
You need to decide what kind of hero you want to be.
That was you, in the blue and the yellow.
Why don't you meet the team after school?
May we count on you in the future?
Yeah, I think so.
This appears to be one of those series that's deconstructing superheroes. You know, we've had so many superhero movies out that now they have movies that deconstruct the superhero genre. And those can be good or bad, or they can be sort of iconoclastic. Already Amazon Prime has The Boys, which is 100% iconoclastic to your standard superhero Justice League Avengers type movie. Now, this one looks cool, but it's animated very much like an animated selection of superhero films. So you're going to have to watch this if you're a parent. You can't just let your kids watch. This is going to be violent and it's going to be graphic. So don't just think, oh, it's a cartoon, we can show the kids. Do some research for this stuff. But it looks like your standard animated superhero series, but it's got adult content to it. The biggest problem that I see potentially with this is it looks like it's trying to deconstruct the superhero genre and then it's going to just warp into doing its own superhero genre. Still, Invincible looks like it might be interesting to watch and a different turn of events. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Mortal Kombat, which is going to be in theaters and on HBO Max on April 16th.
It's a birthmark.
What do you mean?
He was born with it.
It's not a birthmark, Cole. It means you've been chosen.
Throughout history, different cultures all over the world reference a great tournament of champions. That dragon marking? I think it's an invitation to fight for something known as Mortal Kombat.
Okay, first thing I noticed in this is the trailer has to define what a birthmark is. If you have to define what a birthmark is, how much faith do you have in the intelligence of your audience if you're going to do that in the 2-minute trailer? Of course, the first Mortal Kombat that came out in 1995 was PG-13. Everybody complained about it because the game was so violent. This one looks like it's using a lot of CGI blood. CGI blood does not count. It should not, unless you're going to do 8-bit CGI blood. And then I would support that. And then finally, yes, this is darker and more violent than the 1995 movie, but honestly, what's the story? I don't get much of a story here. This might run into the same problem that most video game movies do, where they have an interesting setup, but they really don't have any character development or story. So we'll see. This is not on the high list of stuff to watch for me in the Warner Brothers slate, but then again, I never played the game. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Tom and Jerry and the United States versus Billie Holiday. Two Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with the new film of the week that's going into theaters wide and on HBO Max, and that is Tom and Jerry. A young woman working at a hotel tries to work with a cat to stop a mouse infestation.
This hotel has been host to 4 presidents, 3 popes, 2 kings, and we're about to host the wedding of the century.
Do you think you're qualified to take on this position?
I shine under pressure, like a diamond. Or Rihanna.
One other thing. We have a mouse problem.
With the what now? I'll catch it, sir. We could hire an exterminator, or we can leverage millions of years of predatory evolution.
I think the reason this one's kind of important is because the last couple ones that have gone out on HBO Max and in theaters have been, I guess, award bait movies is the best way to put it. The Little Things in January, and then we had Judas and the Black Messiah back in February. This is the first one that goes for the mainstream audience. I don't think there's a whole lot of mainstream people out there watching Judas and the Black Messiah. I don't think people are going to see it as families. Tom and Jerry is essentially a kids movie. It's meant to be resurrecting the Tom and Jerry characters that, of course, we saw in the MGM days going all the way back to the 40s. I personally am a huge fan of Tom and Jerry. I remember when I was a kid, I'd come home from school, and for like a half hour on one of the independent stations in town, they'd do a handful of Tom and Jerry cartoons. And with the exception of the weird Gene Deitch stuff that went completely off the rails, I was a huge fan of Tom and Jerry, and I've loved him for over decades, ever since I was a kid. So watching the attempts to do a full-length feature has always been a challenge. I remember back in the early 90s, I think they did a feature and they talked. It was weird because generally, unless they were quoting some bizarre "don't you believe it" or like Tuffy Mouse would occasionally say things, generally Tom and Jerry didn't say anything, and it worked great for that 8 to 10 minute comedy sketch, which is what a cartoon is. The big struggle is to make it stretch over an entire movie experience. And they ran into this with the Looney Tunes as well. They work great in short segments, but do they work as a feature film? And one of the things they do with this movie that I guess works, because in a certain way, it's not Tom and Jerry's movie. They do what Disney did with the Muppets. When they made the Muppet movie, not the original one in 1979, but the one they made about 10 years ago, they did a story about Jason Segel and his character and Amy Adams and how they were dealing with living with Muppets. It wasn't necessarily a Muppet movie. The focus of the story were the humans. And in this one, that's the same thing they do here, where they take Chloe Grace Moretz and they make her as this young upstart at this hotel who sort of backends her way into this job so she can work on this project. And there's a big wedding that weekend. And she ends up working with Tom and Jerry, trying initially to get Tom to get rid of Jerry because he's a mouse infestation in a hotel, but then to get them to work to make this wedding happen. And in a sense, it's really not Tom and Jerry's movie. And that's a struggle. But I mean, when you step back then and look at it and say, hey, this is just supposed to be a stupid kids movie where all the animals in this world are animated, everything from elephants to butterflies, it's fine. I mean, still with this one, you fall into the trap of Tom and Jerry just being along for the ride and it really being Chloe Grace Moretz's movie. But still, ultimately, when you strip that away, it's a kid's film. It's something you can watch with the family, and it's got the hijinks. It's got the craziness. I respect it for the fact that it goes for the violence and the crazy antics that Tom and Jerry are best known for. And it hasn't tried to clean itself up. I mean, sure, they're not doing blackface or anything like that, but they're not afraid to have something fall on somebody's head, or somebody gets stabbed by a knife and survive it, because it's ultimately cartoon characters made out of rubber And it, you know, for the most part, it works. I'm going to give it I'm going to say it kind of rocks, simply because it serves a purpose of a Tom and Jerry movie, even if it doesn't extend anything beyond just goofiness and hijinks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is The United States versus Billie Holiday. This is exclusively on Hulu right now. In the 1940s, a jazz singer butts heads with the authorities over one of her songs, which looks at the reality of lynching.
NAACP says Billie Holiday is the voice of our people.
Which one of my songs is your favorite song?
Strange Fruit.
Yeah, it's a song about important things, you know, things that are going on in the country.
This Holiday woman's causing a lot of people to think the wrong things.
It's a starting gun for this so-called civil rights movement.
Those lyrics provoke people.
Y'all got a plan?
She's a drug addict.
Exactly.
This movie bites off a lot. It is not just a movie about this singer, but it's about the burgeoning civil rights movement. It's about lynching. It's about black people in America. It's about the freedom of a black performer. It's about the realities of being famous and still being a second-class citizen. There's so much it's handling right now. It's directed by Lee Daniels, who did Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire, and then, of course, The Butler. I am not a huge fan of Lee Daniels. I think his stuff is overwrought. I think his stuff is overdirected at times, and it certainly comes to play here. In this movie, which is ostensibly about Billie Holiday wanting to have the freedom to do this song about lynching and being pushed back by local authorities to the point that they're trying to bust her for drugs, which she did. I mean, she was a drug addict and she did do all these drugs. And of course, they're just waiting for her to screw up. But it also shows the nefarious nature of the authorities, especially at the time, waiting for her to screw up and then do it. And it is sort of crazy to look at a movie that's talking about doing a song about a reality and truth in the world and it being suppressed. There was a lot of problems when they would play that song. And it's kind of weird to look at it and say, wait, you're prosecuting people for doing a song? So there is some connective tissue between this movie and the subject matter and what goes on today. But the biggest problem is, as gorgeous as the film looks and as well acted as the film is, it is still an overly hand-wringing, at times scattershot production of trying to cover everything in Billie Holiday's life. And she was kind of a mess. And so it really has trouble staying on mark. And in true Lee Daniels fashion, there's not a shred of humor or lightheartedness. It's all just deep, heavy, hand-wringing emotion. And at a certain point, that just gets to be a little bit too much. So I'm going to have to say that The United States versus Billie Holiday kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Cherry and Crisis. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about an interesting 1-2 punch of selections, stuff that's both coming out this week. One of them is Cherry, which is actually coming out in theaters right now. It's going to be releasing on Apple TV Plus in like 3 weeks, 2 weeks, like on March 12th or something. And the other one is Crisis, which is in theaters exclusively this week, and then I believe going to video on demand and DVD and Blu-ray next week, which it's one of those very short windows. See, and this is the thing people don't realize. They always say, oh, you know, this theatrical window, this 17-day, this 45-day one that we're talking about with both Universal and Paramount that I talked about in the news segment. The studios and the theaters don't give a crap about those. They give a crap about the ones that are going to be making hundreds of millions of dollars. It's not even that the theaters care about the theatrical experience. Oh, and clutching their pearls and saying, oh, we need to keep the theatrical experience. The reality is that the theaters just want the money. It's all about the money, and it always is about the money. Both Cherry and Crisis, and I'll get to Crisis in a minute, but in general, both of them focus on the opioid crisis that's happened in this country over the past 10, 15 years. Last Thursday, I was over at my mother's house because I'm a nice son, and I was going over to help her get her medication all straightened out. And Ohio, like a lot of the rest of the country, had been hit with snowstorms and ice storms. And on my way out of her house, down the path to get to my van, I took a fall. And I mean, it was a banana peel slip. You know, I hit the ice and I went up vertically and turned horizontal and I landed smack on my back. It was painful. There was a pop, and I went to the doctor, and they found out that it looks like I have busted a rib. So I've got a busted rib, and the only thing that you can do for a busted rib is rest and do pain management. So I've been doing a lot of the resting lately. The doctor gave me a prescription for Vicodin, which you kind of have to take when you have, you know, a devastating rib injury like this. But what's ironic in a weird way is here I am watching these movies about the opioid crisis while I'm on Vicodin. And it does kind of put you in a different perspective because you're saying, well, I mean, it's obviously I wasn't like just popping them like candy, but you realize that there are people who started the opium addiction with exactly that kind of an injury where they have been given pain pills and it wasn't managed well either by them or by the providers, or the availability was just there too much. So I just thought that's an interesting perspective I have, and I'll probably mention it here and there as I review them, but let's hit Cherry first. A kid from Ohio joins the army and comes home with PTSD only to find himself on the road to opioid addiction.
Sometimes I feel like I've already seen everything that's going to happen. And it's a nightmare.
My one true accomplishment was not dying.
I have this noise in my head.
It'll stop. One day it'll go quiet.
I don't imagine that anyone goes in for a robbery if they're not in some kind of desperation.
I've been at this a while now, and it's no secret what my face looks like.
This is directed by the Russo brothers, who are best known for doing the more recent Avengers movies. They did Endgame and Infinity War, and they did the Captain America movies, Civil War, and Winter Soldier. So they've been spending basically the last 10 years making Avenger movies, and which is not uncommon for a director handling something big like this to go and move to a more intimate, a smaller, a more personal issue-driven movie. So this is not an uncommon theme in terms of director careers. Now, what they did is they got Tom Holland, of course, who played Spider-Man, and he's starring in this movie. And Tom Holland does a great job in it. It really is an acting spotlight for him. And there are certain elements and styles that the Rizzo brothers have that come out in this movie. Their ability to sort of tell things a little bit out of time, their ability to be a little surreal at times, to do some different types of things. And it's an interesting look at this. And look, I give Tom Holland a lot of credit. He goes through the ringer in this emotionally. He's doing everything from puppy love to abject horror and grief. And that's great. I mean, it certainly is a great acting reel for him. And it does expose a lot of issues. Everything from PTSD to the opioid crisis to general crime to just the depression in certain cities like Cleveland, which can have some rough areas. The problem with this movie for me is it's almost too much. It's trying to tackle everything. I mean, either pick PTSD or pick opioid crisis, and I know they're connected in this. But the other thing that this movie does, which is very difficult, and I've always felt this to be a bit disrespectful to our troops, is it makes it look like every single person who goes into the army comes out as an absolute head case who can barely put on their pants in the morning. And I understand there are some people that are greatly troubled after service, and especially greatly troubled after going to war. But it does seem a bit reductive of the American soldier to paint everybody like this. The other thing that this brought out in me when I watched it, as somebody who was actually taking pain medication at the time, this was not something where this person accidentally just sort of overused his medication and didn't have a great rein on it. The characters in this movie are like, oh, hey, let's pop this pill. Oh, here, try this. Let's do this. I mean, it puts a little bit of a barrier for any sort of it could happen to you when the characters are happy to pop any kind of pill that you have. And I'm like, well, that's a great way to get started on something horrible. So the Russo brothers bite off an awful lot. And they masticate it, that's for sure. But I don't know if they chew it all enough to really be fully digested. But still, it's a well-made movie and good performances. It just was not for me, so I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about Crisis. Three different storylines follow the opioid crisis, from the federal officer to a scientist testing drugs to a woman searching for her missing son.
The kid got snagged at the border.
The courier?
Took a year of undercover work to get this far.
Maybe it's dangerous to press a big sale now.
Yeah, but what choice do we have?
Our product will be the first truly non-addictive painkiller.
I'm looking for my son.
Were you aware of any issues with your son?
Like what?
Careful. Should this kid get an itch to name names?
Comparing this to Cherry, I actually thought this was a better approach because it showed different elements to it. And it showed how these different moving parts were working. The most interesting part, of course, is the Gary Oldman story as the professor who's been tasked to test the drug. And he's finding out that these drugs, this fentanyl derivative that they're using, is incredibly addictive. And how certain parameters have been set up in order not to detect that. And obviously, anytime you throw that much money into something, when there's that much profit into something, people aren't going to want to protect it. And I think it shows that problem with profit being in the system incentivizes people to hide the risks. The first storyline with Armie Hammer, I had a friend say, it's nice to see him chew the scenery. And I'm like, yeah, instead of something other than a human being. I found his story interesting because it shows the gray area of the law enforcement and undercover work. The problem with his character in particular is it does fall horribly into cliche. So I think this, once again, kind of like Cherry, it opens it up. It opens up that opioid crisis and says, yeah, look at all these problems that happened. But this one has trouble focusing as well. And I think part of that is because there are so many different moving parts to the opioid crisis. You need something more like a movie like The Big Short to dissect all of this. And then we all know that it was bad. It's how to prevent it from happening again and how to get ourselves out of it, which I don't think anyone has any good ideas for that right now. That's going to be the struggle that we're going to be facing for decades. So Crisis is an interesting movie. It's worth seeing topically, and it certainly is an interesting companion piece with Cherry. But very similarly, it bites off so much it can chew, it sort of chokes on it a little bit. So I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks, too.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Father and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Wrong Turn and The Croods, A New Age. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about The Father. Anthony Hopkins plays a man with dementia whose family is struggling to care for him.
Dad, I'd like you to meet Laura.
I say, you're gorgeous.
Thank you. I must say, he's charming.
Yeah, not always. Laura has come round to help you.
I don't need her or anyone else. I can manage very well on my own.
Everything all right?
Who are you?
Actually, it's me. Paul.
Who?
I live here.
What is this nonsense? Anne?
It's me.
Ah, there she is.
Your father seemed a bit confused.
Something wrong?
Where's Anne? Where is he?
I'm here.
This is a film in a long line of movies recently about dementia. We had that movie Supernova that came out several weeks ago. starring Stanley Tucci as a man who's losing his faculties. He's losing his awareness. And earlier on in the process, he's trying to find a way to go out with dignity. There's also the movie Falling with Viggo Mortensen directing and starring in it. And in that movie, his father, played by Lance Hendrickson, is losing his faculties and losing his rational mind. This is the third movie in the line of cinema, which is interesting because I actually watched this movie a couple months ago. So it was the first of these three movies that I saw, and I'm kind of all covering them within about a month or so of each other. This movie tackles something that's a real issue. It's dementia. Whether it's Alzheimer's or another version of dementia, there's a whole bunch of different types out there. And there's a whole host of ways cognitive decline can present itself. No matter what it is, it's frustrating for the family. So this is something that we're going to see showing up in, over and over again, especially with the aging population that we have in this country. Now, what makes this movie unique is it's as much told from Anthony Hopkins' point of view as possible. So in the sense, you're sort of seeing what he sees, but you're seeing the frustration of his family. Now, Olivia Colman, who everyone knows her for The Crown, being the queen, but she won an Oscar, what, a year or two ago for The Favorite. And she's a fantastic actress, and she's been around for ages. I've always been a fan of hers, going all the way back, you know, pretty much into the 90s. So she is one of his daughters, and there is something that happened to another one of his daughters that is unclear because it's him remembering it. You don't know whether he's remembering one daughter or two daughters or how it is, because then different people end up playing different roles and characters show up or disappear based on whether this guy remembers them. So I think that this is, in a lot of ways, this is a very accurate portrayal of how frustrating it can be, not just for the family, but for the person who's losing his or her faculties. Great performances, wonderful performances, especially by Anthony Hopkins as somebody who's restrained, but also a little bit off kilter and uneven, but also for Olivia Colman, she shows a lot of the emotion underneath without doing much. She's not a big actor. She doesn't overdo it. And that's kind of the beauty in her portrayal of this. It's a great movie to check out. If you've dealt with dementia, definitely worth seeing. Or if you just know somebody who's dealing with it, or if you just want to like educate yourself on the issue, it's worth checking out. So I'm going to say that The Father totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The first movie I want to hit is Wrong Turn, which is a reboot of the original that came out, 18 years ago? A group of friends go hiking into the woods only to discover mysterious people living there.
I saw someone. I saw someone.
It's a story people know but don't talk about. Except in whispers. We don't bother them. And they don't bother us. But anyone who goes up there...
What is this place?
Guys!
Whoa!
They don't come back.
In the original Wrong Turn, it was basically your standard hillbilly redneck cannibal killers in the Wrong Turn movies. It's a version of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Only it takes place not in Texas, but in Appalachia or the foothills and, you know, areas of, at least for myself living in Ohio, I'm much closer to. I remember when they dropped the first trailer for this and I was concerned about it because I said, I don't want to see something overly political. It's a Wrong Turn movie. You know, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre does not have to be political. It can be horrifying in the absence of politics. And this one looked like it was going to be a little bit political because the original victims seem to be these archetypes for a political statement. When I finally saw it, I was pleasantly surprised. It's not a political movie. Even though the trailer sort of gives that feel to it. The trailer almost feels like it's trying to be something like The Hunt, if you remember that movie about a year ago. And that one was fine because it was overtly political and it had all this stuff to deconstruct and decode in there. But this one's just a horror movie about what would you do if you got caught up in the woods by these horrible people. And I thought this was an effective twist on it. I was honestly very surprised and pleasantly surprised with where this movie went and what it chose to do. And the fact that it doesn't necessarily pull its punches, but it also gives you somebody to root for. Like I said, I'm always very skeptical of sort of a reboot like this, but I thought they did a great job. So I'm going to have to say this new Wrong Turn, it's an effective movie. Well done. And taking it down a different path. Bravo. I'm going to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The other movie I want to highlight in the home cinema roundup is The Croods, A New Age, which comes out on DVD and Blu-ray this week. A caveman family meets a more civilized family as they try to survive in the prehistoric wilderness.
Dad always says the pack stays together. Now we're searching for a perfect place to call home.
I thought cave people died off years ago.
We are the Bettermans.
Better man?
Emphasis on the better.
Is that your home?
Kind of big, isn't it?
What's your problem, big guy?
This place is changing everyone.
You're not allowed outside the wall?
Nope.
This farm is like your cave. You're just like me.
This came out in November, I think. And what's interesting is it's actually still number one at the box office because of the pandemic and the release schedule. And like, you know, Wonder Woman did well initially. But of course, now if you had HBO Max, everyone had a chance to see it. So its reign at number one went down. So The Croods, A New Age is back at number one. I think this is going to be one of the few times in history that a movie comes off of being number one at the box office and then goes and becomes number one on the home cinema market. The other thing that's interesting about this, and this isn't even about the movie, I'm curious to see how well this DVD or Blu-ray does, because when they did the original rollout in November, I believe you could just purchase it. You could either rent it, or for a little bit more, you could purchase it. So I'm wondering if that impacts the final box office from the physical media. The movie itself's fine. It's a cute movie. I mean, it's one of those it's very colorful. It's a nice replacement to the Ice Age movies that kind of started to circle the drain a couple years ago. It's vibrant. It's fun. It's got this family interacting with this other family. If you like the characters from the original Croods, you'll probably like these characters. It's a nice little family movie night for the kids. I wouldn't say it's anything beyond that. You know, it's not like a Pixar movie that transcends generations. But if you just want a big, colorful action movie, this certainly is a lot of fun. And it's worth checking out if you got kids, especially. The Blu-ray comes with a slate of bonus features, which are actually quite good. They've got a couple new short films, some cartoons for the kids to watch. There's a gag reel and sort of like the very basic stuff. They got like deleted scenes. And they've got a look at the behind the scenes of the characters doing the voices and who does who and that sort of thing. But here's what I find interesting about the special features is it's got a little bit more stuff to it if you're like thinking of being at home with the kids. Like in addition to like a how to draw segment, they have how to make your own family album out of leaves. So, and that's kind of cool. You know, that's something they also have a, how to make snacks, like these, it has like three recipes at the end, which for little kids, if you're stuck at home and it's still winter or you're just still sheltering at home while the pandemic's raging through America still, you've got some interesting options that the kids can do, something that you can do with the kids that have activities, that are family activities. And you don't see those very often on DVDs anymore. Maybe stuff from Disney. But these are nice little additions to the special feature things. There's also a feature commentary, which is worth checking out if you're a fan of, you know, sort of the behind the scenes of how this stuff works. So ultimately, I'm going to say The Croods, A New Age is a holistic Blu-ray DVD combo. I'm going to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And that's it for the show. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Raya and the Last Dragon, Chaos Walking, Coming to America, and Boogie. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.